Thank you for downloading this episode of Software Gone Wild, a podcast focused on everything software-defined. To get more episodes and explore other SDN and network automation resources, visit sdn.ipspace.net.
Over 40 years ago, a bunch of engineers got this crazy idea. They connected a number of workstations to this thick yellow cable. They invented some crazy mechanism that just randomly figured out who is allowed to send packets at any given time, which was a total no-no in those days, because before that, everything was deterministic and centrally controlled and who knows what else. And they called that thing Ethernet. And of course, everyone else said, well, no, this will never work, and we'll do it better. So things like Token Ring and FDDI and ATM
token
and
bus.
Who knows what else.
Token bus. So remember, we have dot 3, dot 4, and dot 5.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, dot 3 is Ethernet, dot 4 is Token Bus, dot 5 is Token Ring.
I never worked with Token Bus.
Yeah, me neither. That was an industrial thing. And you missed dot 7.
Which was?
Dot 7 was DQDB, Metropolitan Area Network.
Okay.
And you missed dot 17. Which was resilient packet rings, which I worked on as well.
Most of those things are gone, but Ethernet is still here, and it's growing faster and faster and incredibly faster. And Peter Jones, who is with me today.
Hey, Ivan. Hi.
You're a principal engineer at Cisco, but you're also working on this Ethernet stuff,
yeah.
Right? So what are you doing on the Ethernet stuff?
Okay, so Ethernet is defined by IEEE 802. Okay. Mm-hmm. 802 is a project in IEEE. And it was a project that was started in February 1980, because that's what 802 is for. Now, 802 does LAN, MAN, and PAN.
Is it
personal area networking.
Okay, so it's not Palo Alto Networks.
Hmm?
It's not Palo Alto Networks.
No, Bluetooth.
Yeah.
So Bluetooth, for instance, and ZigBee are part of 802.15.
Okay.
And 802.11 is, of course, Wi-Fi.
Mm-hmm.
But 802.3 is Ethernet. So at the time it was started, there was basically three technologies. There was .3 Ethernet. Mm-hmm. Dot 4 token bus and dot 5 token ring. Dot 3 survived and the others haven't. But basically, it's a network. It's a network where you could send stuff. Mm-hmm. So you could plug networks together. Now, you mentioned fat yellow coax,
mm-hmm.
which we call ThickNet. Do you remember what came after that?
Oh, ThinNet.
What else did you call that? CheaperNet.
True.
Yeah.
So what's the difference between ThickNet and ThinNet? Let's start with that historical lesson.
About a quarter of an inch.
Okay. And distance and quality.
Yeah, distance and quality. But CheaperNet was awesome because you could extend it yourself by putting more taps in.
Yeah.
But the problem with Ethernet is the way you figure out if you have a collision is you send for a while and you see if someone collided. But
so,
that depends on how long the network is.
You're sending and you're listening to what you're sending.
Yes.
And if what you're receiving is a garbled version of what you're sending.
If you don't hear yourself,
yeah.
You have a problem. Which is why we have a 64-byte packet limit.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why we have an RPG.
So RPG is?
IPG, inter-packet gap.
Yeah. So,
an RPG is a rocket-propelled grenade.
I know. That's why I was like, I must have heard this wrong.
Actually.
So you have the 64-byte minimum packet length so that if someone at the other end of the cable would start speaking at the same time as you, then you would notice that he started speaking before the 64 bytes were out.
Yeah, it's tiny.
And you have the inter-packet gap so that things quiet down before someone starts to speak. Right.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of interesting history there.
Mm-hmm.
Originally Ethernet was this CSMACD, right? Mm-hmm. Carrier sense multiple access collision detect. We don't tend to do collisions anymore because they're not very useful, right? That was when we were running half duplex.
Okay, so half duplex is what?
A half duplex is one person is, okay, you can either send or receive,
mm-hmm.
pretty much. Full duplex is I do both at the same time.
So on the shared medium, like the coax cable, it had to be half duplex because
yes.
There is only one people allowed to talk.
Yes.
And on point-to-point links, we can do half duplex or full duplex. And why would we ever want to do half duplex on point-to-point links?
Because there's some really old stuff out there that still wants to run half duplex. And
okay.
By default, Ethernet really splits into copper and optical.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're doing copper, the order negotiation runs at half duplex
mm-hmm.
because it's designed to run and talk to the oldest standard that's possible. Ethernet's done well because it's been forward compatible.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You've always been able to have the new thing talk to the old thing.
There's this one thing that we should also mention. There were this thing called hubs.
Oh, yes.
Which really turned a number of point-to-point links into one gigantic coax cable.
Yes.
Right? And if you are connected to a hub, you cannot be full duplex even though you are on a point-to-point link because you are sharing the hub with everyone else.
Yes.
So you can go full duplex only when the other end is a switch.
Is a switch. What Ada 2 would call you a bridge.
Yeah.
Right, because remember, we used to have this thing called a bridge, which was a layer 2. Then we had a router, which was layer 3. Then we had what we call a switch, which is something that does them both in hardware.
Yeah, and I should know that because I was the one bitching about bridges being called switches.
Strictly speaking, if you're forwarding at layer 2, you're bridging, and if you're forwarding above it, you're routing. But we tend to call, these days, you tend to say a switch is something that does it in hardware, and a router is something that does it in software.
Apart from all these routers that we discussed in the previous podcast that have quantum flow processors.
Well, so but they're actually running effectively a software forwarding plane.
Okay.
Because it's written in C, right? The distinction is really, are you doing simple layer 2, layer 3, layer 4, or are you doing like 4 through 7? Mm-hmm. 4 through 7 tends to be the router side because you're doing things like WAN optimization. You're doing things like NAT. You're doing all sorts of strange tricks with the packets, maybe firewalls.
Okay. So let's get away from the terminology.
Sure.
We had the thick coax. We had the thin coax.
Yes.
And thick coax could have longer runs than thin coax.
But it was really difficult to handle. Oh, which is it's a much better medium.
Okay.
But it was thick and it was complicated and it had vampire taps and it was difficult to put out.
And anyone who dealt with those things still remember the terminators you had to put in the end of the cables. Why do you need them?
Because otherwise you get noise. Now, we're going to the end of my signaling theory because I'm actually a software guy. But basically, if it's not correctly terminated, you can't hear everyone else, right? And basically, the media doesn't work. Now, the cool thing with CheaperNet was it was easy to break the termination. And so what you could do, and I remember having this happen in my building, right? We had a bunch of desks and we had like loops of the desk. You could like add in extra segments. Mm-hmm. It was awesome because my segment would work and the guy on the other side of the building would not be able to talk anymore.
Nasty.
And then someone would have to come down and try and figure out who put in the next segment and whether the coax connector was wrong. But then we evolved. Right? Mm-hmm. Then we actually got away from that. We got into what's called the base T world, which I think is where Ethernet really took off.
Point-to-point copper cabling. The point-to-point over-twisted pair.
Over-twisted pair.
Okay.
Originally using two pairs, now using four pairs.
So the original 10 base T was the same thing, more or less, as the coax, just on a different medium.
Different medium.
And the encoding was the same and everything else was the same.
I think you'll actually find the encoding at the bottom level was not the same. I'd have to go back and check. Basically, the media is quite different, so the encoding scheme would have been different.
But
if I had to really figure that out, I'd go and ask the people who did it, because I still know some of them.
Okay. And then we got from 10 meg to 100 meg.
Because at this stage, so back in the dawn of technology, when everyone was very excited, the rule for Ethernet was 10 times the speed at 3 times the price.
Okay.
And so that was the philosophy, right? You had to go 10 times faster.
And with 100 meg, optical links also became more prevalent, if I remember correctly. We had them at 10 meg, but not that many.
Yeah.
At 100 meg, you started linking the switches with optical links.
And then gigabit arrived.
So sending...
And I'm looking, and so just checking, it looks like 10 megabit arrived in 1983, and 100 megabits in 1995, and a gigabit in 1998. And what is this I'm reading off?
Oh, this is the 2016 Ethernet roadmap that you gave me. And I'll put the link into the show notes. So there is a PDF version of the roadmap, and you can download it and print it out for you if you don't know Peter.
And you can also, this is from the Ethernet Alliance, which is a Ethernet Alliance. You familiar with the Wi-Fi Alliance? Ethernet Alliance is the same thing. They exist to promote Ethernet.
Mm-hmm.
And they make this available to people, not only PDF, you can grab the PowerPoint version of these images as well. Mm-hmm. And so if you look at my Cisco Live sessions, I use some of their material, because it's a great way to tell the story of Ethernet.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so at 100 meg, things were still very simple. On optical cable, it was light on, light off, and that would indicate whether the bit was there or not. On twisted pair, it was already a little bit more complex, I would guess.
Yes.
On coax, we used Manchester encoding.
Yeah. This stage, I start getting sketchy, right?
Okay. Let's skip that stage.
Yeah, okay, because the coding side is not my thing. I know more about the current coding, because I had to get involved with that.
Then there was 1 gig, copper and optical.
Yep.
Optical still very simple, light, no light. Copper was probably getting more complex, right?
Yep.
Okay, so what happened there?
The gig was PAM5, so pulse amplitude modulation with some scrambling. So, yeah, it's the basic... Everyone thinks the copper is an awesome... media, it's really crappy.
Yeah, it's really crappy.
I mean, if you had a look at an RJ45 and you wire it together, it's sort of nasty. So, yeah, so basically, if I remember correctly, both 10 100 were only using two pairs, even though we were thinking it was four pairs.
Mm-hmm.
Gigabit started using four pairs.
Ah, I didn't know that. I was crimping the 10 meg versions.
So it got really interesting because a lot of people for 100 megabit or 10 megabit, they'd actually take a four pair and split it up to two twos.
Yeah.
Now, what's interesting in basic order negotiation is order negotiation runs only on one of the pairs.
Ah, so it would negotiate, but it wouldn't work.
It could negotiate to 1 gig and then fail.
Yeah.
And then it would try to do it again.
So you would have to manually set the speed to 100 meg to make it work. Ah, that was that.
Yes, that was that.
Okay.
If I recall numbers correctly, so 1000 base T is by far the most successful standard we've ever seen, right? Mm-hmm. It's everywhere.
Yeah.
Like millions and millions and millions of them. And I think that's what most people think of it as Ethernet today. Mm-hmm.
And now that we're speaking about copper, there were many detours on the way. There was UTP, there was STP, there was SUTP. So what were those things?
Different trade-offs between how you want to put money into the cable versus money in the end devices. So okay. Like Shielded is very popular in Germany in particular because they believe it's a better cable and it is a better signal.
Mm-hmm.
But Shielded can be tricky if you're not careful. You can get ground loops between buildings, right? Which doesn't work very well. Whereas Americans tend more to go for unshielded.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a whole variety of them. But ultimately, it's either a slightly better or slightly worse channel.
So unshielded is where you just have the twisted wire in the cable and that's it. And shielded is where you have this aluminum shield around the...
Well, strictly speaking, it gets a little more interesting than that because then you get into the foil versus non-foil. Because even a lot of them you find, actually shielded, the metal has to connect into the connector and then make a shielding connection with the switch or the end device, right?
So the idea of shielding is that you reduce the outside noise coming into the cable.
Yeah, because the noise coming into the cable is a problem.
Yeah. And that would increase the distance or increase the data rate at the same distance using the same transmission technology.
Yeah.
But you can increase the data rate by using a different transmission technology.
Yeah, you can.
So let's go to 10 gig.
Ah.
10 gig copper. How do you do that?
Oh, 10 gig copper is really... That took a long time.
It must be really hard, right?
So they went from PAM5.
Mm-hmm.
You familiar with pulse amplitude modulation?
No.
Okay.
Well, even if I would be, the listeners would be so pleased. Yeah. Explain.
So basically, you go from a 1 and a 0 to actually start saying, I'm going to have a different pulse level.
Mm-hmm.
And so for PAM 5, I think I have this about right, you basically have 5 levels of signal.
Okay.
10G base C uses PAM 16.
Mm-hmm.
So we're using 16 levels of signal.
So you're encoding 4 bits in one box.
Then we use, it has a Tomlinson Hashimoto precoder.
Mm-hmm.
It has a low density parity check, LDPC for a FEC. Mm-hmm. You know what a FEC is? Forward error correction.
Okay.
And it uses a thing called DSQ128,
mm-hmm.
which is dual square Q, where they basically take two symbols and they attach them together in a constellation of 7. So basically, there's a whole lot of extra coding.
Let's start with the precoder. Precoder is probably the thing where if you have long sequence of zeros or ones, you have a problem. So you scramble them into something that looks like random noise.
So this is where the math gets really complicated and goes beyond. But you go look at it, and I actually have this nice slide somewhere that basically shows what you start seeing a signal and how you basically take little bits out to get actual data.
Mm-hmm.
The key point is 10G base T requires a lot of DSP, digital signal processing,
mm-hmm.
which is why originally it's just taken a long time to become common. I mean, also on this journey in general, as we did new speeds, we did new cabling.
Mm-hmm.
This was okay when everyone was building new networks because, you know, you go build a new building, you put a new network in, the new speed, that's fine. But now the world's a little different. We have an enormous install base of Category 5e and Category 6 cable. That's the cable that was designed for 1000 base T. Now, if you want to run 10G base T, you need Category 6A, which is a much better cable. So Category 5e is spec to about 100 megahertz channel.
Mm-hmm.
6 is 250, and 6A is a 500 megahertz channel.
But still, you are trying to run 10 gigabits on a 500 megahertz channel.
Yes.
Seems like a problem to me.
Coding is beautiful. Remember, you have 4 pairs.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, I need to get 2.5 gigabits down a pair.
Yeah, but still, you are pushing 2.5 megabits down on a 500 meg channel.
PAM 16.
Okay.
You know, digital signal processing has got a lot easier over the last few years. And so I think what we've found is that 10G base T mostly got deployed in the data center.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're starting to take the lessons of that in other places. So one of the other things I do is I chair the MBASE T Alliance.
Mm-hmm.
This is a vendor group pushing 2.5 and 5 gig Ethernet. And we recently completed a standard for that.
Why would you need that?
Well, so let's imagine that you're a normal guy who runs a campus network.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I actually have the numbers, and so as of 2014,
mm-hmm.
there was about 1.4 billion category cabling outlets. 1.3 billion of them were Category 5e and Category 6. How often do you think you like to pull open your walls in your campus and recable?
Never.
When you build a new building, you reskin one from scratch. So we started seeing people who wanted to go above a gig. Mm-hmm. And so this was really led by access points with 11ac Wave 2.
Oh, yeah.
But even, it's actually not that hard to get a reasonable server or the desktop machine that can go above a gig.
But how often do you need that on a desktop machine?
Well, that depends what you're doing. If you're doing video editing.
Oh, yeah, of course.
If you're doing CAD CAM.
Yeah.
If you're doing scientific research.
So if you're doing huge file transfers.
If you're working with large data sets.
Yeah.
And there's a set of those people in most campuses. It's not everyone, but it's some people. No.
So there you have this very high-end niche of customers who need more than one gig.
Actually, I would say it differently. You need, most customers have a section of their population who needs this. So like in my business...
every customer has a niche of this high-end users.
So in my business, it's like the ASIC designers, right? Mm-hmm. They're using huge files. I ran into some customers in Queensland. It's a biomedical research institute.
Oh, yeah.
And so they're...
Proton research.
And so they were doing... they were basically, I think they were doing something like X-ray crystallography molecules. Mm-hmm. So run, test, and then transfer the file. It was taking them 10 times as long to transfer the file as to run the test. Because they were running over 1,000 base T. And they didn't have the money to recable.
Yeah, so for them, every second counts because the equipment is so damn expensive.
Huh.
So it's very easy to justify whatever you can do that can get you faster speed on the same cable.
Sure.
So how did you do that?
So what we basically did was we took a lesson, we took a look at what we'd done in 10G base T and said, you know, what can we do and make this more useful? So we basically just ran it slower. We fiddled with the coding a little bit, but we ran it slower. So if I run 10G base T at a quarter of the speed, I get 2.5G base T.
So you effectively took all the tricks from 10 gig Ethernet.
We took the tricks from 10G base T,
10
gig Ethernet, copper, and 10 years of development and said, now things have moved along. I can put the use this somewhere else.
And because you have the lower frequency band on the worst cable, you just reduce the clock speed. And instead of 10 gig, you're running 2.5 gig on 4 times narrower channels on the
basically, that's the worst idea. Cable. A little bit more complicated than that, but you get the idea.
Yeah.
Or you can run at 5 gig. Mm-hmm. So we basically standardized this in new speeds. And the goal was to basically provide them on the vast bulk of the installed cable.
But you need new hardware for that, right?
New end devices.
Mm-hmm.
So think about this. If I'm doing network upgrade,
mm-hmm.
end devices are easy. Cabling is harder, right? Cabling is the building guys.
True.
So I would tend to think that, I mean, user end devices, they turn over every couple of years, right?
Mm-hmm.
Switches maybe every 5 to 7. Cabling maybe every 20.
Yeah.
So if we can enable people to respond to new needs from the business,
mm-hmm.
then we look like heroes and so do they. Because my goal is to make the guy who delivers the network, mm-hmm. I want to make him look like a hero to his customers. Because then he'll keep paying me.
Is there any trick that you could do, let's say, reuse 10 gig ports on existing switches and clock them at 5 gig?
You need a new file.
Yeah.
We did different encoding, so you need a new piece of hardware.
Mm-hmm.
Now you can build that piece of hardware to run at different speeds. So the stuff we're selling today, those ports will run 100 meg, a gig, 2.5, 5 or 10.
Ah, so the new hardware that's coming out can be clocked at different...
It's not just clocked. They actually run different coding schemes.
Yeah.
So it's not just the clock rate. I mean, I told you earlier between 10G base T is PAM16 with DSQ128. Mm-hmm. 2.5 and 5, they are PAM16 fully coded, not using DSQ128. And DASA base T is PAM5, and I don't remember what 100 is. So it's not just speeds. They're actually... The coding got better on the way through because we got better at building digital signal processing.
You can do that physical stuff either on the motherboard or in the transceiver, right?
So these days, it's normally in what they would call a fire chip.
Mm-hmm.
So we used to have like external things, those Mauis and all that stuff. That stuff has all disappeared.
Okay.
So now there's the end-to-end system, which will be either a CPU or a switch chip of some sort. Then there's a thing called a PHY.
And the PHY would take the receive, transmit, and clock lanes from the switching chip and do its magic and give you the copper.
Digital on one side, analog on the other.
Yeah.
So a PHY is a crossing point, right, between the digital and analog spectrum.
So PHY chip in your campus switches would be the same thing as transceiver in data center switches.
Yeah, I guess so. So data center that was doing 10G base T, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that has a PHY.
Or not.
Pretty much everyone who has base T, they have a PHY chip.
Or you can buy the switches with SFPs.
Sure, but that's optical, right? And so,
you can start copper in there.
Yeah. TwinX, are we talking base T?
Can't you get both?
Okay, so if it's base T, there's a PHY chip in that SFP.
Of course.
Yes. Okay, so it's just wrapped inside that box.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so...
So a fire is a common construct that delivered in a lot of different ways. Mm-hmm. So if you look at, for instance, the optics that we tend to put in our systems, we'll run directly from our switch chip into the SFP+. Mm-hmm. Some other people, if they want to run over long distances or do some more coding tricks, they'll put a fire in the way or a retimer. So a fire is a very general tense.
So fire is a mode.
Yeah, the fire is the digital to analog interface.
Yeah, mode.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, we'll call it. Yeah, we'll call it a mode. And it's original sense, the modulator, demodulator.
Yeah.
You know that's what it stands for, right?
I know. I was using modems when they were still 300 baud.
Mm.
Not the cable modems.
The
real modems.
The 300, 1200, right?
Yeah. Oh, 1275.
Okay, where were we?
Yeah, fine.
I think there's been an evolution of thinking because at one stage it was all new, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's go 10 times as fast. So we did 10 megabit, 100 megabit, gigabit, 10 gigabit. And the next thing was supposed to be 100.
Yes.
And then they figured out it was getting really hard. And so they did 40 as like an interim step.
So they did 40 because they couldn't do 100.
Doing 100 was really hard.
Yeah.
Remember when 100 first came out? It was 10 lanes of 10 with a...
Yeah, I know.
I think is where we started saying, hang on a second, we can't keep going this speed forever.
Mm-hmm.
We need to look at how to make this stuff adoptable. Then the 40 got done. Then the next one that got interesting was 25.
Okay, so let's stop at 40.
Okay.
40 on optical is four lanes of 10.
That is correct.
And you can even splice them out and have four independent 10 gig ports on those switches.
Yeah.
So one thing I was always wondering is what's the difference between a port channel of four 10 gig links versus four 10 gig links bundled, probably at five layer, into a 40 gig link?
Well, it's either a 40 gig pipe mm-hmm. or it's four 10 gig pipes.
How do you bundle four 10 gig pipes into a 40 gig pipe that appears as a single pipe?
If you go down and look at what the PHY is doing,
mm-hmm.
the PMD is doing, basically they're striping data across those links.
You're sending one bit here, one bit here, one bit here, one bit here.
Yeah. And you do lane alignment.
Okay, so this is the next one. Because the fiber runs aren't of exactly the same length, some bits will arrive before the other bits. What do you do then?
You realign them. And you put them back in order. So remember, at a very basic level, if you're doing it at the PHY layer, mm-hmm. you're basically doing this at the bitstream level.
Mm-hmm.
If you do port channel, you're doing packets.
Yes.
But in port channel, you hash them and this stream will go on this guy and this stream will go on this guy.
Yeah.
But they're never even. In the real world, you never get full utilization on port channel.
Yes.
Right?
Totally.
So, and in general, 1x40 is much more efficient than 4x10.
Mm-hmm. And with bit striping, some bits arrive before the other bits, so you have to delay them on the receiving end.
Yes.
So, I guess you have to measure
you measure them up and you figure how they're going to be out of sequence and you put them back in order, you put alignment markers, and yes, there's lots of very interesting stuff happening down there.
So you can put Humpty Dumpty together again?
Yes, but you need a lot of super glue.
Yeah.
Now, you could also not do that and you could just make an omelet.
Yes. Do we have 40 gig on copper?
Actually, yes. Okay, so are we talking Twin X or the Base T?
You tell me.
Okay, so there's a project that was called Additop 3BQ,
mm-hmm.
which was targeting 40G base T.
Mm-hmm.
That project is actually completed. Just on the way through it, they decided they would add 25G base T in as well.
Mm-hmm.
My guess is we're not going to sell a lot of 4G base T, but 25G base T possibly.
Oh, definitely.
And that's targeted for data center,
mm-hmm.
so the reaches are actually shorter. They're targeting, so in a campus, we target 100 meter reach.
Yeah.
Which is actually, I mean, I have slides about this, but it's like...
If it doesn't reach 100 meters, right?
No, it actually is Ethernet, because if you're in the data center today, 25 GBASE-T and 40 GBASE-T, which are recently standardized, mm-hmm. Defined to run on 30 meters of Category 8. Category 8 is the new cable. But again, that's a data center play. So they're really designed to be middle-of-row or end-of-row deployments.
Mm-hmm. And you keep mentioning TwinX.
TwinX, Direct Connect Copper. They call it a DAC cable.
Yeah.
So this is a... This is a short cable for basically running from the top of the rack into a switch in the rack.
Mm-hmm. Why is that different than the other copper?
Coding is different, connectivity is different.
Because the cable quality is different.
Cable quality is different. Yeah, they're optimized for different things.
Mm-hmm. So they would be better quality cable, but it's cheaper in the end because the...
Running shorter distances.
Yeah, and they're fixed length run.
They're normally like, 3 to 5 meters.
Yeah.
But there are more ways under the sun, There's lots of different ways to do things.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're running over longer copper cabling, we have to do more coding on them.
Mm-hmm.
So the transmission delay is higher. Now,
the coding takes time.
Bit times. Yes.
You have to take so many bits.
Yes. You have to go and figure out what you're going to do.
Yeah.
Now, so if if you're in the data center and doing financial trading, right, you don't want that.
Yeah. And so every bit counts.
And so you have to trade off between your channel and propagation and latency. So in the campus, we don't tend to care about latency very much. And the channel is crappy. But if you are in the high-end financials, so for instance, for 25G base, for 25 gig running over copper, you can either run it with no tech, which is you need the best cable, but it's the shortest propagation delay. You can run it with what they call base RFEC, which gives you a little bit more. We can run it with RSTEC, which gives you the longest length, but most delay.
Because you have to do so much more coding, and you have to collect the bits.
There is no free lunch.
Exactly. Next one was 100 gig, right? And as you said, they started 100 gig by...
10 by 10.
10 by 10.
And is now 4 by 25.
Okay. When did they go from 10 by 10 to 4 by 25? It was a few years back.
Yeah,
right?
A couple of years ago. Yeah. Imagine you're in the car business. There is what I would call those Toyota cars, right? You know, Corollas, Camrys, and Lexus. And this is like Ferraris. And then there's Formula One. So at the top end, you sort of end up with the Formula One. It's custom stuff. It's constructed very expensively. This is where the SPs used to be. Then, you know, you take it down a little bit. Then you get down to something that's mass production. And what we're seeing, I think, today is, you know, SFP, SFP Plus, SFP 28, SFP 56. And SFP and QSFP has become like the form factors which we can deploy in volume. And so the one lane and four lane story works. So I could use an SFP. Because remember, we had GBICs and all those other things.
Yeah.
We got down to SFP as being a nice form factor. Now, SFP is actually a pain because it's not very good for cooling. It's hard to get heat out of those things.
Yeah.
But we've sort of got to the stage now where we can build really nice form factors which work for both manufacturers and consumers. So now, as you said, we've got the 10 gig and 40 gig became, you know, SFP Plus and QSFP Plus. You'll see the same thing for 25 and 100 being SFP 28 and QSFP 28. And you'll see the same thing for 50 gig and 200 gig is my guess.
So 25 gig on fiber is really a spin-off of 4 times 25 equals 100, right?
Not so much a spin-off, but a technology reuse.
Yeah.
And part of it goes down to the native development of SerDes technology in ASICs, right? At what stage did that become reasonable? Because really it's a question of, we used to say we're going to build this 10 times faster. Now it's like, what can we build at a reasonable price performance? So 25 or 28 gig SerDes became fairly cheap. And so there's whole lot of presentations that explain why they're magic numbers. It has to do with SerDes speeds, it has to do with PCIe, and it became... So on an ASIC, you pay for pins.
Yeah.
So I want to run as much data as I can for that pin without spending too much. Because if it runs too fast, I need expensive board material. But the world now is trying to continuously optimize around the best price performance.
You mentioned 25 and 28 in the same sentence.
Sure. So a lot of this stuff actually came from Fiber Channel was running a bit faster and a bit ahead from the Fiber Channel.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so what Fiber Channel speeds do you know about?
Oh, well, officially it's 2, 4, 8, 16 gig.
Okay, but they did 32 gig Fiber Channel, right?
Did it?
And they're going to do 64.
Yeah, and 128.
Yeah.
Whatever.
All right, so when the basic definitions of this, they defined a 28 gigaboard SerDes. SerDes is a serializer, deserializer.
So you were sending 28 billion symbols per second.
Yes, 28 gigaboard. And so that technology was developed, and then we can reuse that. And so Ethernet has some religion about what speed it does. Like we don't do a 10.125 gigabit. So we do normal speeds. And so what happened was it became clear in the data center that 40 gigabit was too expensive, and 10 was not enough, and 25 was going to be a nice...
Goldilocks.
Well, yeah, price performance. Yeah. That's fine. So it got standardized. And now a bunch of people in the data center are going, actually, I can do 50.
Which is two lanes of 25. Right?
No. There's two ways of doing this, right?
Okay.
There's a two lane of 25 and there's a single lane of 50.
On one fiber cable.
Or one direct net, yes.
So there are two variants of 50 now.
Yes.
And do I need to care about that if I'm buying my switch, or is it just a different transceiver?
You'll probably want to care.
Oh, nice. So yesterday I had to care which version of 100 gig I have, because the old 100 gig and the new 100 gig don't work together.
Okay, so a rational vendor, what they will do is they'll support both of them.
Okay.
So there's a group called the 25 gig consortium. Right. So they were out first pre-standard for 25 gig, and they've also defined a 50, those two lanes of 25. There's a current project in Attitude 2.3, which is friend of mine chairs, I don't remember the name. They're basically looking at next generation 50, 100, and 200 mm-hmm. as a single lane.
Oh, actually, okay, single so lane. Let's look into the future. What's beyond 100?
Well, 400 gig is about to be done. Mm-hmm. Another friend of mine is chairing that. After that, we're not really quite sure. I've heard 800, I've heard 60. Why don't you look at the roadmap? What does it say?
Well, 800 gig sometime beyond 2020. 10 terabits when we reach a terabit mount.
I think what's happening is it's now much more about all of the ecosystem around it developing mm-hmm. because we're trying to size the link based on the end devices. Mm-hmm. So when we start, you know, when we first got gigabit or 10 gigabit, it was like the link was hugely fast.
Yeah.
So now we really want to size the link based on what's going on the end. So mm-hmm. it really just depends how this technology evolves. So I'm hearing a lot of people talking about 56 gigabaud SerDes right now, mm-hmm. which will drive 50 gig.
Yeah.
Now, the question is when does that become economical? Mm-hmm. Right? Because there's, I can build it as a Formula One car, or then I could build it as a Lexus, right? I'm not too interested until I get the Lexus. I want to do production runs.
200 gig, mm-hmm. will it use 8 lanes by 25, or will it use 4 lanes by 50?
4 or 50.
Ah, so you need 56 gigabaud SerDes.
Yes. And the next one beyond that mm-hmm. will be, they'll get to, you know, 112 gigabaud SerDes.
But you already have 100 gig SerDes, right? You're running 100 gig.
100 gig is 4 lanes of 25.
So you can't run 100 gig on single mode fibers.
You can, but you have to do some interesting weight. You know, you'd have to basically put like a DWDM. You have to put 4 lanes of 25 in the same fiber.
Ah, so you are putting 4 lambdas of yes. 25 into the same single mode fiber. So it's not really 100 gig. It's a mix
it's
of
four lanes, yes.
DWDM, CWDM, yes. whatever you have here.
Yeah, it's 4 lanes. I mean, Ethernet these days in the optical world is. How many lanes do I have and what lanes do? Now, there's also some people doing some interesting stuff in the OIF, which is the optical networking forum. Mm-hmm. They're doing a thing called Flexi, where you basically channel together different speeds to have a, you could maybe hook together 6 100s to have mm-hmm. a 600 gig link. It's called Flex Ethernet.
Okay. And you would do that by bit striping, not by link aggregation.
Yes.
Interesting.
That's quite popular in some of the service provider people, again, mm-hmm. because if you have the links, you want to use them as efficiently as possible. Drop me a note later. I'll send you the pointers to that information because I know a guy working on that.
So there are people working on an alternative to port channels where you would do bit striping instead of caching and spraying the packets.
Sure, because it just works better. But it requires more hardware.
Yeah. Okay, now if we move down to the very low end where we started, you said that there are new 10 meg standards coming up.
Yes.
What's going on there?
All right, so if you think about it, Ethernet is becoming the dominant networking technology for wires. Mm-hmm. And it's going into new places. So a few years ago, there was a project started which was 100 base T1, mm-hmm. right? 100 megabit Ethernet over one pair, and it was started to put Ethernet in cars. Mm-hmm. Have you ever looked at the wiring harness of a car?
No.
It's a lot of the weight. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of different buses in there. And so we want to move them all to Ethernet.
Okay. What are they using now?
A lot of different things. CAN bus. There's a lot of buses in cars. Okay. There's analog stuff. But cars are becoming more like a small mobile network.
Yeah.
So we want to build it like a mobile network.
Well, I've seen my mechanic doing troubleshooting, and there were like 20 different processors in the car.
They call them ECUs, environment, electronic control units.
Okay.
So there's a couple of projects that have recently finished. There was 100 base T1, which mm-hmm. is 100 megabit over one pair. Mm-hmm. 1,000 base T1, which is gigabit over one pair.
Hola.
And there's
how do you do that?
Coding. But this is only 15 meters rich. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's a 40 meter one as well, but 15 meters is inside the car.
Well, but the moment you start doing things on one pair, you either do multiple frequencies or you do echo cancellation.
Right? Everyone's doing echo cancellation. But I have to do this in four pair as well, right?
So you are at the complexity we had with V32 modems.
Oh, like way beyond that. I can show you a good picture later on, but the echo cancellation is fun because you get lots of echoes, right?
Yeah, of course.
Because you get echo from every join. Mm-hmm. There's two recently completed standards for 100 megabit and gigabit over base T1. Mm-hmm. And there's a standard that goes with them called Poodle. Mm-hmm. It's a standard Poodle. Power over data line.
Okay.
And so that provides power. So basically mm-hmm. I can now take a single pair and write either 100 megabit or a gigabit mm-hmm. and provide power. So what's interesting is
power feed interfere with data transfer?
Yeah.
Okay.
Coding. But it's very powerful to be able to deliver power and data on a single cable, right? Think about a car, right?
Yeah.
You don't want to put double the cables in.
No, of course not.
What it turns out is there's a lot of sensors in the car that don't need 100 megabits.
Okay.
So there's a lot of people who would like to build basically 10 megabits at about half the price of 100.
So the driver is the price.
So for
power consumption, probably.
Yeah, and what you need, right? Yeah. Go against the world. We want to size the communication for the end device. Mm-hmm. If what's in the end of the thing is a light, I don't really need to give it 100 megabits.
No.
Now, the other thing that's...
Well, you could modulate the light.
No, we're not doing Wi-Fi. That's a different call. I could talk to you about that one as well. That's a different call. What we're looking at now is there's a standard being done, which is Adafruit 3CG, mm-hmm. which I have a role in that standard. We're trying to standardize 10 megabits over single pair copper mm-hmm. for a couple of different use cases. One is cars, about 15 meters. Then we look in the ones that I care more about, which is factories and plants. So factories and plants these days have a lot of old cabling in there. And so normally you have Ethernet in the middle of it, but mm-hmm. then you'll have like a gateway out for something like BACnet or Profinet or
RS-232,
all that stuff, right?
All that 50-year-old stuff.
We want to transform all that to Ethernet.
On the existing cable.
That's nice if you can do it on the existing cable, that way you don't have to rewire it. Mm-hmm. And part of this is because the people are changing. So you might have an old machine and there'd be a guy who'd walk up to it and he'd like hit it with a hammer and listen to it. Mm-hmm. Right? Those people are all retiring. So now someone coming out of college, he wants to walk up, connect it with his iPad and see what's wrong. So that thing needs more brains. So we want to basically take that technology and move that layer of the network into Ethernet.
So the real reason is that we're running out of people who are able to listen to the machines.
It's a serious problem. I mean, the world is changing.
Yeah.
And so compute now has become quite cheap, right? So we can now make smart devices, right? But we've got to feed them. So if we can basically start putting a smarter sensor out there, mm-hmm. means I can do things like I can do preventive maintenance. So instead of having someone go listen, I could, for instance, analyze the vibration in this thing and know when the gearbox is going to break. I mean, being able to do that sort of thing and basically do maintenance when it's required as opposed to on a schedule mm-hmm. is worthwhile.
Yeah, that's cool.
So you can make an intelligent factory.
So before we go into Internet of Things, let's wrap it up.
I'm actually not doing Internet of Things. I'm doing Internet of Things is everything, right? I'm actually doing what I would call industrial Ethernet or industrial networking, which is building control systems. Mm-hmm. Right? So I'm not Internet of Things. I'm not talking right now about the connected refrigerator, but I am talking about trying to take all the things we've learned about building campus networks mm-hmm. and start rolling them out into factories mm-hmm. and plants because we need all that.
Okay. So if people want to know more about this exciting stuff, where can they learn more?
Okay, they could ping me on Twitter.
Okay.
My handle is Peter G. Jones. They could find me on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. They could drop me an email, but I'm probably better on Twitter. And then I can point them out to all the other places because there's lots of people out there working on this stuff. And what's interesting is we really like hearing how people are using it mm-hmm. because we're now getting a little more humble. We don't think we know everything. And so what we want to find out for people is what they're using and how it goes. Actually, I get it a bit mean. So if you don't tell us what you need, mm-hmm. don't complain when you don't get it.
Agreed.
If you tell us what you need, we'll try and build it for you.
And then you bring it to me and I go like, nah, I need something else.
And you should have told me the right thing in the first place.
Yeah.
So this is a community, right? The community has all sorts of people. People who put stuff out there, people who use it, people who build, right? If the community works together, we all move forward together. If the community works at odds, you're not so good. So there's been many standards groups. We've got a really cool idea. Let's build a standard. It goes nowhere because there isn't really a use for it. We can't afford to do that anymore. So I think if we work together as a community, we'll get the stuff we need done.
Okay. You've heard him. Contact him. Thank you, Peter. It's been a great journey through all the Ethernet standards.
Ivan, it's a pleasure. And if you want to do more of this, I know a bunch of people who can give you much more detail than where I went.
Yeah, we'll definitely do that.
Awesome.
And you've been listening to Software Gone Wild. I'm Ivan Pepelniak. If you want to read my blogs or listen to the other podcasts, just go to ivspace.net and start exploring.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Software Gone Wild. If you want to learn more about software-defined networking, network automation, and related topics, visit sdn.ipspace.net and explore our courses, books, webinars, and podcasts.